You are listening to The Kevin Smith Show.
Expressed on this program are the responsibility of those who make them. They do not necessarily represent the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or any of its affiliates.
Hi, folks. Welcome to the show. Whoever you are and wherever you happen to be all around this gorgeous planet, thanks for being here at The Kevin Smith Show. Those of you joining us for the first time, welcome aboard. We're glad to have you. And be sure, if you're new, to check out my website. There are some things there for you. For instance, our free weekly newsletter. You've got time to subscribe during the show right now and during the show tonight. You've got time to subscribe. It's free. No strings attached, and you can unsubscribe anytime you want to. It will go out tomorrow, so if you subscribe today and then confirm, you'll get an email asking you to confirm that you actually meant to subscribe. It has a link in it. You just click the link, and that's it. If you do that, then you'll be getting this week's edition of the K-Files E-Zine. How about that? Absolutely free. The news in China, you know, I mentioned that. Actually, I've mentioned it, I think, a couple of times about the weather, the climate in China, and how things there seem to be corresponding to the things written by Robert Felix when he wrote the book Not by Fire, but by Ice. He's been on the show talking about how we're actually headed into an ice age. Well, now we're seeing this unusual weather over in China, and that's pretty cool, pun intended. It's pretty interesting. It's doing exactly what Robert Felix said would happen. We also are having a lot of snow, an unusual amount of snow across the United States, and again, that is tracking right along with what he said would happen. And now, out of Russia, there is a scientist who has been studying all of this, and he says we need to get ready for a new ice age rather than global warming. His name is Khabibulo Abdusamatov. There we go, Abdusamatov. Tough name for somebody like me who's named Smith, Abdusamatov. He's the head of a space research lab at the Pulkovo Observatory in St. Petersburg. And he says that the evidence is in, and that in fact, whatever global warming there may have been peaked out in the period of 1998 to 2005, leveled off, and we are headed now towards a new ice age. His prediction is that it will arrive sometime around 2055 to 2060. Of course, it could happen earlier, it could happen later, but he says we'll be in a new little ice age very soon, relatively speaking, soon. So, all the panic about global warming, he thinks, is unfounded. And there are people who religiously cling to that global warming thing. I don't say it's not happening. I don't say that it's foolishness. Some people do say that. I don't. I say the jury's still out. We have credible scientists on both sides presenting evidence. One says global warming and one says ice age. My guest this evening is David Serretta, filmmaker, and he's got a new one out. We'll be talking about it in just a moment. You know, Valentine's Day is just a few days away, and you don't want to make the mistake of forgetting to say I love you to that very special person in your life. Fresh, beautiful red roses say what you feel better than words ever could. And our friends over at 1-800-Flowers have put together something very special to help you express your love. When you purchase a dozen of their spectacular long-stemmed red roses, you'll get another dozen for free. Plus, they come with a beautiful free vase. Click the 1-800-Flowers banner on my website at kevinsmithshow.com and you'll be transported to the special Valentine's Day page at 1-800-Flowers. Send the gift that says more than your words could ever express. Alien Seeker News has blasted off and is providing a new and important resource for everyone interested in UFOs, aliens, alien abductions, Bigfoot, Chupacabra, and more. Featuring five of the top UFO radio talk shows, lots of information and articles in free forums, Alien Seeker News has launched on its journey to greatness. Go to alienseekernews.com, register for the free forums, and get the classic Flying Saucers Are Real by Major Donald Kehoe as a free ebook. Join today. Most of the great music you hear right here on Steel Eye Media Network is supplied by the independent artists from GarageBand.com. If you hear a song you like, go over to GarageBand.com, look it up, download it. You can even buy the group's CDs, in many cases, right there at GarageBand.com. I'll be there in the morning light.
Kevin Smith here. Do you have your Kevin Smith Show t-shirt yet? No? Well, let today be the day you step into the world of galactic fashion. Visit the Kevin Smith Show online store and get yours today.
David Serretta is known, I guess, probably to all of you, and maybe to some of you, best known for his film work with having to do with UFOs. He's been with us before, and he's got something new out that has a different perspective, a little new perspective on things that I think all of us are interested in, topics that we talk about on this show, and he's here to share with us about this perspective and this film. David, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show.
Good to hear your voice, Kevin. Are you hanging in there? You're still alive?
Still alive. You know, every day I wake up and discover I didn't die during the night, I figure I won.
That's good. That's good.
And then I have a firm commitment. Since I won, just don't change anything during the day, and you end up a winner.
That's right. Yeah. If you can just, it's amazing just to stay alive today.
It is.
The challenges are enormous. You know, in my search for extraterrestrial intelligence, you know, life beyond Earth, I have actually began. When I saw the UFO in Berkeley in 1968, you know, our family had moved from Alberta, Canada to Berkeley, California in the middle of the 60s, and my father was getting his PhD in psychology, and he wrote his thesis on the healing and super learning effects of deep relaxation meditation. And he became kind of a master at it and won his PhD, which is a really hard thing to do at Berkeley, in actually proving that consciousness, that if you could relax your brain waves and really, really slow down, you could learn more information and retain more information in a deeper relaxed state while you were in front of your professors than you could if you were in a hyper or tense state. And further, that you could heal yourself while going into these states of consciousness. And it's interesting because, you know, in the search for extraterrestrial intelligence, there are many mystics, like Pythagoras is one of my favorite, who actually admitted that in going in altered states of consciousness, he found that all of the nine planets were inhabited by intelligentsia whose bodies were more tenuous or made of light. And even Dante Alighieri, the Catholic mystic, discovered the same thing. He actually goes in these spectacular journeys through all the nine planets and finds that the deceased and departed and the great saints are living on these different planets, including the sun. And it's really amazing to think about the idea that we're living on a planet, but we're only seeing a sliver of the totality of what light represents, the entire electromagnetic spectrum. And then if we expand our consciousness, we might find out that we're not alone in the universe at all, and we never were. And as my father introduced me to meditation at a very young age, I began having experiences that were so profound and earth-shattering, I eventually, by the time I was 18 years old, I was meditating every single day. And meditation is not just about, like, you know, reaching higher states of consciousness. It's about, you know, expanding your awareness so that you gain more knowledge. You can get your ability to have insights and understanding increases, just like, you know, I said my father's PhD proved that states of meditation and deep relaxation help people learn, help them reach their own inner energy potential and genius potential. And so my new film, The Voice, embarks on this journey to look at what is going on, you know, since the Cold War has ended. Little known to the public eye and most of mainstream media, and thanks to radio shows like yours, we can talk about this. Physicists have been studying consciousness in the lab as opposed to weapon and bomb research, finding greater ways to commit, you know, more and more genocide. There are all these physicists working in this area, and nobody knew about it. And I decided that there were so many physicists that I became friends with who were proving what consciousness explorers, like Robert Thurman, who is actually Uma Thurman's dad, who wrote the Tibetan Book of the Dead. He coins the term psychonaut. So you think of an astronaut who goes in a spaceship. The psychonauts go out of the body and beyond, you know, the physical dimensions, and they explore the universe. And Thurman is actually in the film The Voice. We have Professor Roger Nelson at Princeton University, where Einstein, of course, lived and taught, and where John Nash taught, and where Edward Witten is today. At Princeton University, Dr. Roger Nelson heads the Global Consciousness Project, and we'll be talking about that. And Gary Schwartz, a Harvard-Yale professor, runs one of the most advanced consciousness studies labs in the nation at the University of Arizona at Tucson, and he's in the film. Stanley Krippner is a world-renowned psychologist on dreams, is in the film. My father is in the film, and we have myself and all these amazing experiencers, people who have been practicing meditation and healing technologies and started to have these deep mystical experiences. And what's amazing about the mystical experiences is now science can prove that it's all real. In fact, as science and spirituality are merging, we're actually seeing a synthesis and a greater understanding of the intelligent, all the way from the intelligent atom to the intelligent universe. So the film, which is at voiceentertainment.net on the internet, for those of you who want to find out more, explores the auras of subatomic particles, atoms, DNA, the human body, animals, mammals, and all the way to the verified aura, intelligent aura of the Earth itself, discovered at Princeton University, and all the way to the auras of cosmic proportions that literally merge out into what are known as the nine greater fields of enlightenment. And what we find is, at the base level, biophotons, which are on all organic living things, were discovered by a German physicist named Fritz Albert Popp, who actually proved their existence in the early 1970s. And what Popp, the significance of what he discovered is that, just kind of like, when you look at quantum physics and you think of the movie What the Bleep Do We Know, you think of the idea that we're actually co-creating our reality. We're actually affecting everything around us, and our thoughts actually come into manifestation. The very first verses of the Dhammapada, which is the Buddhist, version of their Bible, it's called the Twin Verses, describes that our mind is the universe. That there's actually this Buddhist monk that I practiced meditation with for many years in L.A., and he actually tells me, your mind is the universe. There is no universe outside of this mind. And the very first words of the Dhammapada is, our life is shaped by our mind. Our life is shaped by our mind. We become what we think. Now, quantum physicists are proving this. There's a great physicist named David Bohm, who studied with Jiddu Krishnamurti, an East Indian mystic, in the 1970s, and had these, literally passionate dialogues about how this mystic was trying to tell him, you are what you're observing. There's no separation, that you are one with everything in existence, but you're actually shaping it. And this physicist was trying to really understand Krishnamurti, and he never really got it for years. And Krishnamurti was trying to make him have that experience of cosmic consciousness, where you go beyond the body and you become the field, the human aura, which starts to merge into these greater fields where we unify our consciousness with everything around us. And he really didn't get it. It took him years, but finally David Bohm mathematically and scientifically proved what's called the implicate order, that we are actually the observed, that when we look at giant stars and planets and trees, we can't actually see evidence of how our mind is affecting our reality. But in the quantum universe, meaning the quanta or our amount, quanta comes from the word amount, the quantity of the atom and smaller, when we look at particles and waves, which are really one, they're really the same thing. Particles, think of your brain as a particle and the brain waves as the wave. And what they found is that the human brain, when it started observing anything in the quantum universe, it was affecting it. You could see the wave patterns changing in subatomic particles just upon observing it. And it even got more complicated when quantum physicists were trying to locate the position with certainty of where the electron was at any given time. The electron's like a little planet spinning around the proton. You think of the sun and the earth. The earth is spinning around the sun. Well, you have your electron spinning around your proton. No one can actually know today where the electron is without affecting it. Because as soon as you observe it, you affect it. And as soon as you apply higher frequency wavelengths of light to know more precisely where it is, for example, a blue photon has a shorter wavelength, therefore more precise than a red photon, which has a longer wavelength. It's kind of like aiming a cannon at a fly, and the cannonball bounces back and tries to tell you where the fly is. You only get this huge amount of information in the size of a cannonball, and the fly is smaller than the cannonball. That's the frustration. So it became known as Heisenberg's uncertainty principle. You can't be certain where this electron guy is at any given time without, when you apply higher frequency photons to it with shorter wavelengths, which are more precise, they transfer more energy through the photoelectric effect and therefore affect the velocity of the electron. So it's the deeper you get into the quantum universe, the more you find that we're one. We're in this unified relationship. Now, going back to Fritz Albert Popp's discovery of biophotons, he actually proved that our bodies are transmitting all the time light waves. And what's interesting about that is it took all the way until the 1990s for a physicist named Walter Schempp to prove that the atoms with which we're all made, which are emitting biophotons or emitting photons all the time, when electrons change frequency, they jump what are known as shells or diameter wavelengths in the orbit around the proton. The atoms emit light waves or photons. And then when the atom goes into a higher frequency wave state, the atom emits photons, and when it goes to a slower or more relaxed wave state, longer wavelength, the atom receives photons. So just like you and I are talking on the radio right now, we're sending our voices on radio waves, which are traveling at the speed of light, which are actual radio photons. And when we see pictures on television, we're seeing pictures compartmentalized on on microwaves, so which are light waves. So essentially, what Walter Shem found is atoms were talking to each other all the time. They're not just sending out blank light waves. They're sending information on the light wave. So if you have a thought, all the atoms in your body, which are emitting biophotons, are actually emitting and receiving intelligent information at the speed of light. So we are all actually co-creating our existence, and we're affecting everything around us. We're also trapped in a matrix of consciousness and waves that prevents us from seeing that we are not actually alone in the universe. So that's where the film really goes. We go from the auras of atoms and subatomic particles to actually Fritz Albert Popp proves the origin of biophotons is in the DNA itself. And these light waves are emitting all the way out into the universe. Our light body has been scientifically proven. We are not just a physical organism that has no connection to the outside universe. So going back to this, you know, Buddhist monk, and in fact we look at all religions in this film and even the atheistic views, that what all the different religions were saying about enlightenment is actually now verifiably and scientifically proven. And it's so exciting to see this is going on in research labs all over the country, even at Stanford University. And nobody knows. So the film is like an inside look at what are ordinary people experiencing in consciousness, and what are scientists discovering about those experiences.
So the movie is, what I am understanding is that this movie provides us with the marriage of information the world of spirit and the world of science, and showing that science proves spirit and spirit confirms science.
Exactly, but it also shows us one of the great things about science, and what's exciting about it merging with spirituality, is science gives you a repeatable, reliable model of actually how the process works. I'll give you an example of this. For example, when we're trying to communicate information, when we're sending information, for example, when we're lecturing or we're talking to our family members or our wife or husband, we're sending information, so we're in a more higher frequency brain mode. And if we're trying to receive information, we need to be in a longer or more relaxed brainwave state. For example, my father's PhD thesis proved that if you were more relaxed, you could retain more information from your professors than if you were more hyper. So if you're sitting in a chair that's uncomfortable and it's hurting you, in fact, in Russia, super learning experiments were done where students were lying down comfortably. Can you imagine sitting in a university lying on your back? And they found that the students lying on their back with their eyes closed retained more information of what their professors said than those who were sitting uncomfortably. So what this could ultimately mean is, the scientific repeatable model says when you're relaxed, you receive, and when you're more hyper or more higher frequency brainwave, you're sending. So if you're in communication mode, you need to be in a higher frequency mode. But if you're in a receptive learning mode, you need to be more passive. And the atom actually proves this repeatedly. It will not receive information when it's in a higher frequency mode. It will only send. So sometimes what we do in our learning processes is if someone's trying to teach us something and we're already trying to interfere with the message and we're trying to send them something right away because we disagree with them and we haven't even listened to the whole thesis. We already have our defense, and that prevents us from even receiving. So that shows us, you know, science, again, so repeatable, so clearly repeatable. But ultimately, we get into deeper and deeper levels of what the Buddhists, the Christians, and the Jews, and you know, the mystics of all religions in the world have taught what is true and authentic enlightenment. And as we get deeper into the film, we come to, for example, Roger Nelson at Princeton University, whom since the 1980s they've been developing these random event generators, which are like little computer sensors that they place all over the planet. They have 60 of them set up over the planet right now. And they start to produce non-random data, and these huge spikes start to form preceding major global events. For example, 4 hours before the Twin Towers were struck on 9/11, they started seeing a spike in the data. Now, they didn't know at Princeton University that, oh, we're going to be attacked by airplanes or terrorists or whatever it was. They only know that something major is about to happen. That's how good they are right now. They can see earthquakes hours in advance of them happening. And strangely,
okay, let me ask a question now.
Yeah.
You say they can see earthquakes hours before they happen. They see non-randomness in their generators, but they don't know that that's an earthquake. They just know something big is coming, right?
Yeah, you're correct. So what it means is, for today, after 20 years of research, they've proven that the Earth has an intelligent, what Professor Roger Nelson says, the Jesuit priest Teilhard de Chardin described as, Teilhard de Chardin, which is one of his mentors, describes a noosphere, N-O-O, sphere, S-P-H-E-R-E, an intelligent conscious sphere actually envelops the Earth, and that when humanity goes to the next stage of evolution, we're going to actually realize the power of the collective mind in that sphere. So right now, scientifically, to answer your question, we're only good enough to know that something major is about to happen, including even major compassion events like Princess Diana's funeral yielded enormous non-random data in huge spikes started forming as the world through the media engaged in her funeral. And even Earth Days and Earth Healing Event Days actually register in the data. And they have 60 of these things placed all over the planet. And because the speed of light is so fast in a small sphere, such as the 24,000-mile circumference of the Earth, in less than a second, all of the generators go off and they all produce the same data. So the next stage is actually to be able to differentiate on what kind of an event is about to ensue. Is it traumatic? Is it compassionate? Or can they actually differentiate between an earth event such as a hurricane or an earthquake and an actual human event? But it seems that, according to Princeton University, that the Earth definitely and has precognitive ability, so it can sense things before they're going to happen, which is remarkable. It could even explain how in our dreams that we can see events before they happen. My brother, my wife, and I all at the same night, 2 weeks before Hurricane Katrina, we all had a dream that same night that we saw a city that looked like a nuclear bomb went off. And we all saw different facets of that disaster. And we didn't know what it was, but 2 weeks later we had Hurricane Katrina, and of course that's what the dream foretold. We're probably just tuning into what happens is, our biophotons that are transmitting and receiving in through the human organism all the time, proven by Fritz Albert Popp in 1974, I believe, they're carrying and they're sending and receiving intelligent information. So if the Earth knows that something terrible is about to happen, we can actually dream it. It can give us pictures and imagery and symbols so that we can recognize something precognitively, so we can have a warning. So
okay, I hate to do it. We're headed into a break. I want to pick up there when we come back and talk about us as receivers of this earth mind, I guess I'll call it. We'll see if that's what it is. All right, we'll be back right after these words.
There seems to be resistance to everything I do. She said it's coming from yourself, and none of it is true. He said, but you don't know the thoughts I have going round and round. She said, I don't have to know that you'll rebound. 'Cause I believe in you. I believe. Getting anywhere. He said, you're brave, you got talent and a certain savoir faire. She said, but you don't know the way I feel with my worry and my fear. He said, I know exactly how you feel in case you need to hear. Before the dawn, and you think you just can't go on, and you're worried about your money, you're worried about your health, you're worried you're not funny to anyone but yourself, and you're worried you can't make it, and you're worried that you will, you're worried you can't fake it. You got nothing left, but still, I believe in you.
We are back, and that song reminded me of an email that I received this week. And representative of several that I receive each week wanting to know titles of songs that we use here on the show. And as you know, our music is the music from GarageBand.com, the independent artists there. We have a list on the website, and the link is right up. It's the first link on the right side on the website. And you can click that, find the song that you're looking for. It'll show you the name of the group, and then you can find it over at GarageBand.com. Download it for yourself, all right? We're talking with David Serretta, and we're talking about his new movie, and not just the movie, but what's in it, the content of it, what it means. Now, when we went away, you had just been talking about these random event generators or random data generators or whatever they are. We've talked about those briefly on this show before. I think actually a couple of years ago when they first began to make, I shouldn't say when they first began to make news, when I first became aware of them. I think it was a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. And we've talked about them. And it seems very odd that they would be able, in concert, to produce non-random data all at the same time unless they were plugged into or clued into or receiving all of them the same information. Now, as they are spread out around the world, it would seem they are receiving that information from the Earth itself. But there is a possibility, is there not, that the information they're receiving is from off-world?
I think that's a really good point. If the Earth is conscious, and Princeton University scientists are verifying this, and, you know, Einstein actually said there's no room in this new physics, meaning quantum physics, for both the field and matter. For the field is the only reality. I mean, he had literally gone so far at this point in his research that Einstein became a mystic. He became convinced that there was a higher presence and spirit in the universe. He actually said that. And I think it was what is known as spooky action at a distance that convinced him of that, even though he couldn't explain in the theory of relativity how conscious beings, for example, when scientists separate a mother and a baby rabbit by thousands of miles and they hook their brains up to EEGs and atomic clocks, they pinprick the baby rabbit and the mother feels it instantly, not at the speed of light, which is much slower than instantly, but instantly. And that would mean they're communicating at a distance, but through a medium that's something beyond even radio waves and microwaves. And that's where this whole intelligent universe thing started to emerge. And now, you know, as we can see, these random event generators are the first technological devices that are being used, as well as in the film The Voice, my film The Voice, which is at voiceentertainment.net, that we have a plant consciousness researcher who actually hooks up EEG, which are normally used for measuring brain waves. She hooks them up to plants, and she finds that as human beings start to approach plants, when she hooks the EEGs up to the plants and interfaces them with musical MIDI systems, which produce, you know, synthesizer sounds, she can use the sounds that the plants are producing to demonstrate how plants are conscious. For example, if you they actually found that if you bring fire into the presence of plants, they go into total shock. They produce these really erratic, you know, brain equivalent to brainwave states, and they really go into terror and shock, and the sounds they produce are erratic. And when a person comes around them who has really loving intentions, they produce all these really beautiful, melodious sounds. And this is also in the film. In relation to the conscious Earth and the idea that we can actually tap into it, that if we practice meditation or prayer in any of our religions or even non-religions, we can actually experience this. I had a U.S. war soldier in Iraq who fought in the Iraq War living in Belgium. He purchased my Deep Relaxation Meditation CD from the website, and he started doing it. And first he wrote me saying, oh my God, I really feel like this deep relaxation is going to help me recover from post-traumatic stress disorder and get him off Xanax and painkillers, because he's really traumatized from, you know, being a soldier and fighting in several conflicts. But he wrote me this letter on December 23rd, and this will blow your mind. I just sent it to you, Kevin, directly from Gregorio Longoria in Belgium. The letter came on December 23rd, And he clearly states that he had a vision, and he said, I've never had a vision before, but in the super deep state, he clearly sees the former Pakistani Prime Minister Benazir Bhutto at a ceremony where she's surrounded by people, and she's placing her feet in a large silver bowl, and she's going to have her feet washed for some reason unknown to him. That's what he wrote me. And then all of a sudden, a man runs into the center of the ceremony and detonates himself with what is apparently a bomb harness. This is December 23rd. I sent his email to Fox News, George Norrie, Coast to Coast AM, everybody I knew in media that day that I thought of. And nobody really took it seriously, but he was like, I don't know why this is happening to me. 4 days later, I get an email from him before I even looked at CNN, and he's crying because he said, have you seen the news? She's been assassinated, and there was a suicide bomb. So what this shows is all of us actually have the ability to tune into the precognitive or psychic dimension. We all have that ability, and this is an example of a war soldier whose brain is oriented towards war and conflict, who receives a vision of the assassination of Benazir Bhutto well in advance, several days in advance. But the thing is, in our civilization, we're not really taught to take these things seriously. Like my brother and I and my wife seeing Hurricane Katrina in advance, and you know Greg Longoria seeing this in advance. We're not really trained to do that. But if we did, and we really took heed to what was happening in these visions, we might, and unfortunately we're not always right. Sometimes we get visions that don't mean anything. And so it's not easy to say. I think Greg Longoria's case is very, very rare where you see somebody who has no psychic abilities in his past. He's a recovering war soldier, and this just spontaneously happens. But if he's dreaming imagery that the Earth itself already knows, and to answer your question, can we get information that is beyond the planet, extraterrestrial, through the conscious Earth? I think the Earth would know in advance and in the present moment when it's being visited by star beings from other worlds. And that there is a way of tapping into that. There's a way of actually knowing. I mean, technology has a long ways to go to really prove this, but we know from the deep advanced states of meditation that many of the Christian mystics have experienced. Thomas Aquinas wrote to a friend in Venice that he said that no saint would deny that all of the planets and the stars and the heavens and the celestial bodies are controlled by angels, that all of this is a divine symphony that's all being orchestrated by super, super, super advanced intelligentsia. So that's, further where we go into the film and we see what happens when we go from, what Einstein is saying is the field is the only reality. I mean, the field is what explains how you can have communication with something from a distance from you, which is what spooky action at a distance is. And how that actually occurs is through the field. I mean, you can see the ends of your fingertips and the ends of your toes and the ends of your body, but you can't necessarily see the field. A scientist from Russia, this is really excitingly demonstrated in the film The Voice, a scientist from Russia with several PhDs in physics, Konstantin Korotkov, at the University of St. Petersburg Tech University in Russia, has a near-death experience, and he wants to prove scientifically the spiritual. He develops the world's first three-dimensional human aura imaging camera. So if we go from the discovery of Fritz Popp's biophotons to the discovery of Curlian photography, where we can actually see that all living things have a corona or aura, Konstantin Korotkov develops a camera that can see your entire aura in three dimensions. It's really incredible because what we do is we use the camera in the movie and we measure on five different meditators' auras and our fields, and it can actually see all seven of our spiritual energy centers, which were actually known in ancient Jewish mysticism in Kabbalah. Joseph Mark Cohen, who's a Kabbalah teacher, appears in our film to describe how the ancient Hebrews one of the oldest religions on the planet, knew about the chakra or energy system, and how the ancient Chinese knew about it, and also the ancient Hindus, that this aura machine can actually see them. It can see all seven of them, and it can tell how much energy is coming out of each energy center, and how where we're weak in our field and where we're strong. And amazingly, when we measured our auras before and after meditation, you could clearly see vast improvements in our fields.
All right. We are headed into break again. And when we come back, I want to talk about the possibility of putting that camera on a satellite and taking a look at Earth to see if Earth itself has a living aura that we can photograph and view. We'll be back right after this. Kevin Smith Show selects one of its very best shows each week and turns it into a free podcast? Well, it's true. You can download free Kevin Smith Show podcast right now and get a free fresh podcast each week. Do you want to start building your own library of Kevin Smith Shows? All you have to do is visit our website at kevinsmithshow.com and click the free podcast link. They're yours for the download. We are back. I want to remind everyone that tomorrow evening, or tomorrow, depends, evening, well, that depends on which part of the planet you're on, but tomorrow is when I will be hanging out in the chat room, and the time to come to the chat room will be whatever time it is when you start listening to this show live Monday through Friday. So at whatever time you listen to this show Monday through Friday live, that's when I'll be in the chat room, all right? And so if you're not a member yet, go ahead and join, because it's in the members area, and I will be in the chat room hanging out, answering questions, chatting, discussing all kinds of things, that whatever's on your mind, all right? And we'll have a good time. We're talking with David Serreta about his new film, and the film is called, I believe you said, Voice, right?
The Voice, yeah.
The Voice. And in a moment, I'll get you to tell us what that stands for. Each letter stands for something. First, what about this camera that you've described? What do you think would happen if you put it on a satellite and aimed it back at Earth and took a picture? Do you think it would show that Earth has a living aura?
Oh, I really think it would. I'll give you an example. Roger Nelson at Princeton, who directs the Global Consciousness Project, they took an ultraviolet, invisible ultraviolet. You know, human beings only see from red to violet. We don't see ultraviolet near photons, ultraviolet far, and ultraviolet extreme. We don't see X-rays or gamma rays. So what they did is they took this $35,000 super camera, and this is in the movie The Voice, and they took a picture of a man meditating in a dark room. I mean, not a sliver of light would get in. And they took a picture of this man's head, and it's remarkable in the photograph, although it's quite pixelated because of the very low levels of light. You can see what appears to be clearly a spiral. It looks like a miniature spiraling galaxy with a vortice funnel that is entering the top of the head, which is known as the seventh chakra in the East Indian system. And in Jewish Kabbalah, it's Keterah, I think, the top of the head, which connects us to the universe. So the ancient Hebrews knew about this, you know, over 4,500 years ago, that we had these energy centers, but now a camera is seeing it clearly. And we think of the halos over Jesus Christ and the Virgin Mary and the saints that were depicted in the Renaissance paintings. Now we're seeing scientific evidence of that at Princeton University with this ultra-low-level light camera. So if we took the same type of photography from a satellite of the Earth, I think we'd start to see, well, if we can see that plants have auras and we can see that human beings have auras, I think we would clearly see that the Earth itself has its own aura, what the Jesuit priest Teilhard de Chardin prophesied. But what he's prophesying is that as our minds, through media, through radio shows like yours, what happens is if one person thinks, you know, we think of, you know, the idea that you are what you think, which was an idea presented in the movie What the Bleep Do We Know, and in fact they have become my new distributor for The Voice, which we're going to have a small theater run of the movie in theaters with them. The idea that we are what we think and is very small if we just have one person thinking that thought. But with media, with the power of radio and television, if we can get everyone to think together, for example, in the film, Gary Schwartz, who runs the Consciousness Studies Lab at the University of Arizona at Tucson, a Harvard Yale professor, he believes that we can avert a hurricane or an asteroid if we get millions of minds thinking together, which amplifies the power of consciousness like a beam. And that is what Teilhard de Chardin said, is that the next step in human evolution, that we're not finished yet, even though egoically we think, okay, we're a baked cookie, you know, we've already reached our pinnacle, we have intelligence, we have technology, we've come out of the Stone Age and the Bronze Age and all of the great ages of development. He's saying there's one more major step in evolution, and that is the global consciousness, the power of thinking together as a global mind. We amplify our thoughts. So if you visualize looking at the Earth from space, If everyone was thinking together in unity for one cause, to end violence all over the world, to find the cure for AIDS or cancer, to visualize together seeing that somebody will embody the next energy system that will take us beyond fossil fuels, we can do that. I mean, and there's no doubt in history that we've had no shortages of geniuses that have developed super technologies that have always taken us to the next level. You have your Einsteins, your Teslas, and your Faradays, and Maxwells, and all the way down the list, Edison, all of them. And so now, if we really think together to manifest, how can we get off fossil fuels so we can save our planet? But then you also have to think about the idea that if the Earth is conscious and we're destroying its ecology, its harmony, then the information that it's sending out through its biophotons, once again proven by Fritz Albert Popp in 1974, I believe, then it means that information is negative information. And what if the universe sends it back an autoimmune response, just like if your body gets sick, you want to fight off the virus? So if we don't change our ways on the planet, will nature actually send us a response that will actually get rid of a lot of us? And I really believe what all the great saints have said, including when we think of Thomas Aquinas saying that the angels control the orbits of even the comets and the asteroids, then it is an intelligent system. And it is all conscious. That, like, for example, Kevin, go back to, think of the Big Bang. The moment of the Big Bang, physicists measure the universe starting from an infinitesimally small point, smaller than the greatest unit ever measured, smaller than a subplanck length, and the universe explodes forth out of this void, and all of a sudden you have this enormous temperature, and they're measuring the birth of the universe in the first millionth of a second, all the way down to the first hundredth of a second, all the way to the first second, and all the way to, 8 or 12 billion years later, which is where we are today. And they measure that as if somebody's watching. And there's a saying in Zen Buddhism, if a tree falls in the forest and there's no one there to see it fall, did it fall? And the question is, if there's no organic life forms, and there's no one watching the Big Bang, then is it even happening? And what we really believe is that, when we look at Scripture, ancient Scriptures, we can see that the universe was self-aware, that it was conscious, that the God field, or if you think of the aura of God, it actually, and you'll see this in the film, there's evidence of this in many near-death experiences, many mystical experiences, These fields of awareness exist and permeate the universe, and the fields can see, can hear, and can sense. And actually, the ultimate question is, does the universe have memory? And Gary Schwartz at the University of Arizona Tucson believes that all atoms have infinite storage capacity for memory. So not only is the universe aware of itself, it can see it, itself being born, it also has memory. And this memory and history get stored in the atom itself. In the Book of Enoch, which is the first biblical prophet, we can see evidence in the Book of Enoch that the idea of writing down knowledge in history by the ink and pen is considered inferior and actually scorned and looked down upon by the angels, because it meant that when we lost direct access to true information and knowledge, that we could lie, we could cheat, we could make up false stories about history, we could erase someone from history. In fact,
of course, we know all of that has been done. We have about a minute till break.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Well, what I'm saying is the idea of the universe having a supercomputer, if you can think of it like that, where super intelligence, where it stores information, what if we can access that information and get the truth about anything we want to know? Anything we want to know, including who killed Kennedy and why, which is a question I propose in the film. And that is actually technologically going to become feasible, I believe, within 100 years.
I remember when I was in high school,
One of my science classes, I can't remember which one, but the teacher said that everything that has ever happened on this planet created disturbances and vibrations, which are all stored even in the rocks. If we could figure out how to play the rocks back, we could see what actually happened. I thought it was bizarre then, but looks like we may be headed towards that. All right, we are into a break, and ladies and gentlemen, when we come back, I will open the telephone lines for you if you have a question or comment. Also, the flash lines will be open for those of you living outside the North American continent. Most of the great music you hear right here on Steel Eye Media Network is supplied by the independent artists from GarageBand.com. If you hear a song you like, go over to GarageBand.com, look it up, download it. You can even buy the group's CDs, in many cases, right there at GarageBand.com. Okay, folks, this is what you've been waiting for, your vacation of a lifetime. It awaits your arrival down under in beautiful and historic Hobart, Tasmania. And to make sure your holiday really is a dream come true, you'll be staying at the Bath Street Apartments. Here are just a few of the things that you'll enjoy in your home for the holidays. Stunning water and mountain views from all windows and from your own private balcony or veranda. Modern furnishings, a full modern kitchen with all new appliances, oven and hot plates, fat-free grill, full-size refrigerator, large-capacity microwave oven, cappuccino machine, dishwasher, and enough crockery, cutlery, and utensils to satisfy anyone's culinary desires. The lounge room has an extensive range of electronic home entertainment equipment, including, now get this, a big-screen TV, free digital satellite, pay TV on Foxtel AllStar with over 60 channels, DVD, video, wireless broadband connection, free local telephone calls from the in-room telephone with your own private telephone number so loved ones and friends can call you directly. The bathroom? Wow, the bathroom has a large spa bath, separate shower cubicle, ceiling-mounted heat lamp and fan and hair dryer, and it just gets better and better. Folks, you've got to see Bath Street Apartments. So click the banner over on the Kevin Smith Show website or just go to bathstreetapartments.com.au. Your dreams are awaiting your arrival. You know, Valentine's Day is just a few days away, and you don't want to make the mistake of forgetting to say, I love you, to that very special person in your life. Fresh, beautiful red roses say what you feel better than words ever could. And our friends over at 1-800-Flowers have put together something very special to help you express your love. When you purchase a dozen of their spectacular long-stemmed red roses, you'll get another dozen for free. Plus, they come with a beautiful free vase. Click the 1-800-Flowers banner on my website at kevinsmithshow.com and you'll be transported to the special Valentine's Day page at 1-800-Flowers. Send the gift that says more than your words could ever express.
Call the Kevin Smith Show at 1-800-289-1092.
We are back. Very quickly, let me remind you that that special offer from 1-800-Flowers is good only until February 3rd. This is February 1st, so if you've been procrastinating, you need to come off of that and take care of business, all right? Just click the link. There's a special ad on my website on the left column, and it has it takes you to the special Valentine page at 1-800-FLOWERS. We're talking with David Serretta, and we're talking about not just consciousness. We're not talking about just quantum physics. We're talking about the merger that appears to have happened between the two. The telephone line is open at 1-800-289-1092. It's toll-free throughout North America. If you live outside of North America, you can send me an email. Send it to flash@kevinsmithshow.com with your question or comment. I'll read it, and we'll ask David Serretta to respond to it. David, let's go to the phone line. Caller, you are live on The Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling?
Hey, Kevin. This is Kevin from Iroquois Falls. How are you doing?
Good.
And Mr. Serretta, how are you doing, sir?
Good. How are you?
Good. I'm doing. I remember when you were on with George Norrie on December 18th. I actually tried to get through them, but Tom wouldn't let me on. My question is it just the Earth that has that kind of an aura, or are the life-bearing planets, or do all planets have that aura of life around them?
Well, what the great mystics, like, for example, Dante Alighieri describe, and I've had some of these experiences myself, which I detail in the film, is the more harmonic our own aura gets, and the more we come into tune with the greater sphere of consciousness, you discover that everything has an aura, all planets have auras, and that what really is the advantage of going into these mind-expanding states of consciousness is not only just bliss in the eradication of suffering. For example, the Buddha's, most of the emphasis on Buddha was the eradication of suffering. But what really starts to happen is we gain knowledge, direct knowledge, as our sphere expands. And I really believe Einstein was in these states of consciousness, and that's how he had such an incredible understanding of how the universe actually is working. Professor Robert Thurman, who is, you know, one of Time Magazine's 25 most influential people of 1997, in the film says that when Buddha meets this Hindu god Brahma, whom the Hindus thought was the god of the universe, Buddha asks him, "So tell me how the universe works," at which point Brahma has to admit that he's not really God, the god of the universe, and he doesn't really know how it works. And what happens is, you know, when people reach expanded states of consciousness, their auras really light up, and they really do look luminous. I've seen people in India where you really do get to see these amazing auras around certain people, but it doesn't mean they're all knowing yet. But the idea that, you know, what Kevin, what you said, what your high school teacher told you, that even the rocks have information in them and they have all history in them, that is actually scientifically going to be attainable. The yogis of ancient India believe that every atom, for example, a rock like the rocks at the Wailing Wall in Jerusalem, have recorded all of the history of everything that has happened in their presence. And if you could extract that history, what Gary Schwartz says is that every atom has infinite, you know, storage capacity, because they have the ability to exchange and store information in the collective field. You can actually get the truth about anything. And when you think of what a power that would be, I mean, think of a Hollywood movie where a scientist figures out how to do this. You could know every political scandal, everything you want to know, history could be accessible through this type of technology. And that would terrify global powers today, because you could not lie about anything.
Truth itself would tend to terrify virtually everyone in power, whether it's industry or government.
Absolutely.
Let's go back to the telephone line. Caller, you are live on The Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling?
Hi, this is Chuck from Ohio.
Yes, Chuck, if you will, turn down the program, because there's a delay and it will confuse you.
Okay, I'm sorry. He was talking about the aura and your mind, and that's, I don't know how to explain it. I'm like a daydreamer. And I wanted to know about, like, the aura that he talks about. Is it kind of like a daydreamer. You know how you're constantly dreaming. I mean, I have trouble sleeping at night because I dream, and I just wonder if that's kind of like what he's talking about.
All right. What about that, David?
Well, the creative mind, the daydreaming mind, is part of our consciousness. It's our ability to create imagery in our mind, you know, sometimes to entertain ourselves, but also to work out problems, to build things in our mind. For example, Nikola Tesla used to build his inventions in his mind, every single nut and bolt before he ever wrote anything down. But just general drifting and daydreaming and thinking is sometimes just, you know, for some people is a way of just relaxing. But our auric field, those images that you're seeing in the daydream are imagery that are projected into your field, into your aura. So, yeah.
All right. Let's go to the telephone line once again. And, caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name. And from where are you calling?
This is Michelle from Quebec.
Okay, Michelle.
Good evening, Kevin.
Good evening.
Good evening, David.
Quebec.
Where the planets are at different times have any effect on the consciousness of the Earth?
Well, that's when you get into cosmic astrology. I mean, if you think of Dante actually said in the Divine Comedy when he was journeying out of body, this is a Catholic mystic in the 14th century, who is going out of his body to the sun, he sees that the sun is sending its information from heaven to the earth. So it's writing the will of heaven on the earth. And you think of the Christian Lord's Prayer, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Well, all of the information that's leaving every star in the universe eventually reaches everywhere. So the light that we're seeing from Andromeda left it 2 million years ago, but when it finally reaches us, it's transferring a certain amount of information to us, along with everything else. So everything is affecting everything. Planets are affecting each other. They are transferring information in this giant symphony. So our minds have the ability, for example, Pythagoras, the great mathematician, experienced, and I actually experienced this in meditation, where you can go into an expanded field and you can hear the music of the planets and the stars. He called it the music of the spheres. And Pythagoras actually found the intervallic system for all modern music, which leads to the birth of classical music based on his mystical experience. I mean, it's really incredible. But now NASA scientists have recorded the sound of the sun, the actual sound. You can hear it, and it has it's very similar to the way Pythagoras described it. So what's amazing is he is in the 6th century before Christ, and he's describing the sound of the sun, and now, you know, 2,600 years later or more, we're actually recording it, and we can hear it. I actually have it in my computer. It's remarkable.
All right, the telephone number, toll-free throughout North America, is 1-800-289-1092, 1-800-289-1092. If you live outside of North America, you can send me an email. Just send it to flash@kevinsmithshow.com, and I'll read your comments or questions. And we'll ask David to comment on them. David, I've been thinking about how to ask this question, and I don't really know how to word it so that it says what I mean. So I'll just take a stab at it. What is the aura? Not what is its purpose or what does it tell us? What is it? Is it infrared light? Ultraviolet light? What is the aura?
Well, when Fritz Albert Popp proved the existence of biophotons, which is the aura of light emanating from all living things, he found that it spanned both the invisible ultraviolet, very far into the ultraviolet, all the way through the visible colors from violet, you know, indigo, blue, green, you know, all the way down through the warm colors, you know, red, orange. And he found that it also came down into the infrared. So the aura, and it may go further than that. That's just as far as they've been able to measure it so far. So all of the living things on the planet are actually emitting light in a spectrum that is beyond what the human eye can see. So that is the aura. But what's exciting now is we're finding that it's not just like a light bulb that has a very, very low amplitude, which means it's a very weak amount of light, but it has information. And that means when you die, I mean, we're coming to the point where scientifically we can prove how the spirit can separate from the physical body. The light body can contain all of your memories, all of your pictures and dreams and memories, and can separate from your physical body and transfer that information, who knows, where to heaven, to a higher dimension, to anywhere else in the universe. And now we're getting into what are known as superluminal velocities, where we can see that light can travel instantaneously anywhere in the universe through what are called singularities. And that actually opens up a whole new realm of possibilities for explaining how, you know, even the aura of God can communicate instantly over all the great distances in the universe.
All right, let's go back to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling?
Oh, good evening. This is Drew from Connecticut, Kevin.
And, yes, Drew.
Good evening, David. I've been a fan of David's. I saw his recent video, and congratulations. What a great production. And visited your website. But one of the questions I had tonight regarding Linda Mullenhow recently on her earthbiles.com had information about our existence as a hologram and, in essence, our 3D projection. We're almost like a virtual reality. And I was wondering if David could comment on that, and I can listen offline.
Okay, Drew, thank you for the call.
Yeah, I mean, are we a holographic projection? I mean, that's a really abstract question. I mean, there's this idea that the world is a matrix that's created by somebody else, that we're a digital projection of somebody else's design. And, you know, I'm not really in favor of that idea. I believe there is a matrix, but we actually are part of the matrix at will. Our will, by partaking in the knowledge of good and evil, we enter what's called a polarity matrix field. We oscillate between good and evil, and that oscillation keeps our aura very small and keeps us in a non or expanded or very contracted state of consciousness, which causes us to suffer. And that does create a web of auras that are in the polarity matrix that interface with each other and makes up this kind of holographic universe concept. And there's an author named Michael Talbot who wrote The Holographic Universe. And in a way, holograms are really just the light digital blueprint which projects itself into the physical universe and manifests. So part of it is really true. But the idea that, you know, that this is just somebody else who's creating this, you know, video game like the movie The Matrix, I definitely don't believe that. I believe we are co-creating it with our free will, that we're actually in control of this. And if you want to step out of the polarity matrix, I mean, for example, the teachings of non-dualism where Jesus says, if thine eye be single, thy whole body shall be filled with light. Well, it's interesting because all the atoms inside of our bodies are trapped in polarity matrices. They're all charged positive and negative. The subcomponents of atoms, quarks and taus and muons, all of them have antiparticles. They're all in the polarity matrix. So they're all a reflection of the information we're giving them, which is this, on a very subconscious level, we all radiate the knowledge of good and evil. And the problem with the knowledge of good and evil is everyone interprets good and evil differently, and it causes us to disagree. And because, as a whole, good and evil is a conflict, it wastes all of our spiritual energy. So when Jesus says, if thine eye be single, your whole body shall be filled with light, he's saying if you end the internal conflict over good and evil, you attain true peace. And you don't waste your energy in this conflict, and your aura starts to expand and turns into true spiritual light. And that light field starts to really, really expand into the universe. And that is what the enlightened masters attained. There are more examples of non-dual teachings of Jesus in the uncanonized Gospels, like the Gospel of Philip and the Gospel of Thomas, which were not approved by the Church, but I think are very, very valuable information. So to answer the caller, I mean, ultimately, it is kind of like a hologram in a certain way, because we are ultimately light. We are we do have auras that science can measure, but we're much more than that.
All right. Let's go back to the phone. And caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling?
This is Brent from Wyoming.
Yes, Brent.
I'd like to take a stab at your question about what is the aura. How about if I say that an aura consists of all the information your body is projecting on every frequency and at every level? And that includes physical, intellectual, emotional, spiritual, all the information. It talks about your physical health, your mental health, your emotional health, your spiritual health, everything.
Okay.
That is your aura.
What do you think about that, David?
Oh, I totally agree with it. I mean, I think the aura has, I mean, for example, this GDV camera that we feature in the movie The Voice, it can measure your physical aura. It can actually zoom in on your spleen and find out if the energy field around your spleen is healthy or weak or strong. And then it can measure your emotional aura. The machine can actually see if your energy centers are in harmony or if they're in disharmony. It can see how much energy each one of them is putting out. So there's many facets of the aura. So I really agree with the caller. It's a very sophisticated system, but there's another level of the aura, and that's where we're not just a sphere that's contained in itself. When we go into, for example, if we do a prayer, for example, if we do the Christian Lord's Prayer, if you're a Christian, what I believe happens when you say, Our Father who art in heaven, your aura is now asking itself to be in communion with God, with your form of God, and that actually is real. Then God actually, that field of the aura of God actually merges with your aura, and you establish communion or relationship. And that is also scientifically getting proven right now. There have been many experiments done on water, and to prove that when water, for example, holy water is tested scientifically compared to ordinary tap water, there's an enormous difference in the property of the water itself. And so we can see that, again, what I'm saying is, I call them harmonics. And, you know, meditation, you start in a state of meditation, which is trying to bring harmony to your aura. But when you do prayer or healing intention, you're going into harmonics with higher fields. I really believe, like, for example, the God of the Old Testament saying, you shall have no graven, which means carved, serious images of God. What he was really saying is, don't get egotistical about your images of God. God is really this invisible field that you can't necessarily see, but you can communicate through and feel. And it is an overall guiding, what Gary Schwartz calls in our film, the guiding organizing design concept. He believes scientifically we now have a strong case for what he calls the guiding organizing design of the universe, the intelligent, you know, consciousness of the whole universe, which is God.
And that would be supportive then of the idea of intelligent design, that traditional science fights against and ridicules and says that's nonsense. There's no such thing as an intelligent design, and we all got here by random selection.
Yeah, and I agree with you. For example, this has scientifically been proven. I mean, a lot of these new authors who are really just atheists in the media trying to disprove the intelligent universe. And one of the first verses of the Bible, it's Genesis verse 2, that the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters. In this film called Water, which is about to come out on my website, and the producers of What the Bleep Do We Know are releasing with me in theaters, scientists in Russia have done experiments on water and proven that thought and spirit moving itself on water can cause water to restructure and reformulate. For example, the experiments done on holy water. So if science can demonstrate that little human brains can affect water, then what does that say about the second verse in Genesis, that God is creating the universe by moving spirit, which is consciousness, on the simplest atomic structures, hydrogen and oxygen, which is water, the primary elements that are the building blocks for all of the stars and the planets and human life in the universe, there's a strong case for that in the lab today, that consciousness and matter are together. They're one. And here's
let me yeah, interject something before we get too far from what you just said. Where it says the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters, the word that is translated moved is the word that is most often translated vibrated.
Oh, wow.
And so you're dealing with frequency.
You're dealing with frequency. So what we did, in my movie The Voice, when we had this glass of water in front of us and we saw before and after meditation how the water's coherency and structure and energy improved dramatically after 3 hours of meditation. Imagine what God can do, the supreme intelligence of the universe. But what's exciting about this is, again, it's starting to scientifically prove that a lot of what was said in the Bible is scientifically verifiably true. There is an intelligent design behind the universe, and the atheists are wrong.
It would seem also that it's that this new science, while verifying the existence of God or spirit or universal consciousness or whatever people want to call it, while verifying that, and that flies in the face of the standard Darwinian explanation, some of what is being discovered flies in the face of standard theologies as well.
Oh, absolutely. I think it's just our understanding in theology. It's not that it was never written in the scriptures. It's just we interpret it based on our current understanding of science and knowledge. But the more I study quantum physics and spirituality, I find a complete merging. That the words of Jesus and many enlightened masters from other religions are speaking in harmonic languages that resonate with quantum physics. Like the teachings of non-dualism go back to the book of Genesis, when God warns us not to take in the knowledge of good and evil, for if you do, you will die. Well, essentially, you're ingesting a polarity matrix, which is conflict. And if you understand the field of singularity, non-dualism, and physics discovered by Paul Dirac, who won the Nobel Prize, you realize that the way this non-dual singular field behaves in relationship to polarity matrices is exactly coherent with the words of Jesus Christ. I mean, there are so many references to singularity and non-dualism in the Gospel of Philip and Thomas, and also in Matthew 6:22 and in Genesis. It's remarkable, but it's in a language that we didn't understand until these ideas in physics started to emerge, and that's what I'm doing. I'm putting the two of them together so people can see that the prophets were speaking in a very, very advanced language.
Do you think that, and we've only got a couple of minutes here till break, but do you think that as our understanding of quantum physics expands, that we will understand better some of the statements of prophets that we have thought were cryptic?
Oh, I absolutely agree. I mean, my friend Joseph Mark Cohen, who's a Kabbalah teacher on ancient Hebrew, was here last night visiting, and he's in the film, and he actually believes the words, the vowels and the syllables of the ancient Hebrew, if we study the effects of water and atomic structures when they're intoned with these syllables, we actually see that matter actually responds to frequency and vibration, as you just put it. The Spirit of God was moved upon the face of the waters, was vibrated. And we want to do scientific studies on this. I actually believe the angle of the spin of the electron around the proton, and there are other people who agree with me, the actual angle of the spin, which right now is completely erratic and unpredictable, may be influenced by thought and consciousness and language. And I want to do experiments in that area to see. And this is exciting. This is going on in our research labs all over the country, and very few people know about it. And what's exciting is just to bring it to people and see that there's a whole new revolution going on. It's called the consciousness revolution.
All right, we are very shortly headed into a break. But look, if by whatever means you affect the angle of the spin of the electrons, you are, in effect, changing the element itself. You're changing, you know, the more angularity there is, the more radioactivity there is, generally speaking. And you're actually changing something from one element to another. When we come back, let's talk about alchemy.
Get it all. Become a member at kevinsmithshow.com.
Call the Kevin Smith Show at 1-800-289-1092.
Let me remind our members, if you haven't downloaded the January edition of the magazine, not our free weekly newsletter, but the K-Files magazine, it is in the members area, ready for you to download, so be sure you do that if you haven't done it yet. All right, we're talking with David Serretta, who is famous, actually, all around the world for his filmmaking. And we're talking about his latest film and the content of that film. And, David, when we went away, you were talking about that you would like to be able to do some experiments about changing the angularity of the spin of some electrons. And I said, well, when you do that, when you change the angularity, you change the element. And you make it either less or more radioactive. I said, let's talk about alchemy. Now, alchemy, of course, had to do with mixing various chemicals and potions and et cetera, and putting them through various processes in the hope of causing one substance to be transformed into another substance. Lead into gold, for example.
Right.
But is it possible that what you're talking about doing here would be sort of a psychic or spiritual alchemy, not using chemicals or potions, but actually changing the structure of matter?
Well, it's not just the structure of matter, but although it is. What quantum physicists are finding out now, and this is very new research, is that information, which is consciousness, is the authority in the universe. There's something called quantum entanglement, which Roger Nelson goes into the film, which first may be the first theory that can explain psychic or non-local communication between two living beings. But also, there are physicists that are taking, for example, the actual information of, say, for example, the atoms of an apple, and they'll project that information on other ordinary atoms at a distance and entangle them with the same information, which causes those atoms to then resemble the atoms of an apple, right? So essentially, it's kind of the same thing as what we just talked about. If I can use a new quantum camera, and there are new cameras coming out, and I know the scientists that are working on them, that are going to be able to actually see sub-Planck length action in the quantum universe in real time, which means you can sit there and say you can do a Hebrew prayer or chant or a Hindu chant or a Christian chant or a Muslim chant over some atoms, and you can actually see how that chant is affecting the angular momentum and angular rotational spin of the electron around the proton, and then you can see how the different elements in the periodic table are oriented. And maybe we can start to understand, for example, when Jesus divided the loaves of bread and fed the masses, all he's doing is sending the information of bread, and he's encoding other atoms, entangling them with the same information, and all the atoms just become a loaf of bread. And this is called, literally, it's like cloning at a quantum level. And they're doing this already at the Max Planck Institute on a subatomic level. They're only able to do it with a couple of atoms at a time. They're not able to, you know, duplicate a loaf of bread yet. But we're going to be able to do that. And what's exciting is you can now see how, for example, in Tibetan Buddhism, the idea that you can have 1,000 copies or bilocation of a certain meditation master can appear in 1,000 places at one time, and how the same is happening in Christian mysticism and other religions, we can see how that's actually possible in physics. And entanglement, which we take on in the film The Voice, is the only theory that can explain it. And it's really exciting to think about what this means. Ultimately, it means, as far as alchemy, you know, you think of the early alchemists like Robertus Magnus, who was taking lead and base metals and converting them to gold. But the alchemists could do a lot of other things than that. They could reverse aging. They had total mastery over matter. They could make gold, they could make silver, they could make whatever they wanted, because they knew this secret, apparently, that no one was allowed to know about. But what if this secret is really just consciousness? That, you know, as we're seeing, that thought can actually affect water. We can see in the second verse of Genesis that God created the universe by moving God's spirit over hydrogen atoms, which is very simple, the simplest atoms in the universe.
and then creates everything else. What if we can do the same thing? If we really learn how to isolate conscious information and entangle other atoms, we could feed the masses. We could do unbelievable things. And I think we're eventually going to evolve in that direction.
All right, I want to go back to something you said earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And has to do with the Big Bang.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm one of those sticks in the mud who really believes certain principles of science.
Mm-hmm.
I do not believe that spontaneous generation is a possibility, and I do not believe that that nothing can explode and become something.
Mm-hmm.
If it exploded, it was a something.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's not a time when we're at zero.
Mm-hmm.
But let me propose something that I've done some thinking about. Don't know really what I think about this, but it has occurred to me. Element 115 does not exist on our periodic table because we have not found it previously. We had not found it on this planet, nor had we found or discovered it or sensed it in space.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, I forget which particle accelerator, but this last year, they did some experiments, and for a few microseconds, element 115 existed.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes out with a bang. It's like, bang, that's it. It's gone.
Mm-hmm.
Where did it go? Matter doesn't disappear. What if, in our attempt to create element 115, what happened is we blew a tiny micro hole in the side of our universe, and it all of that energy rushed out into a space beyond our universe and became another universe?
Mm-hmm.
And what if that's what happened that caused this one? Then you don't have a nothing becoming a something. You have a something becoming a something.
Well, see, I agree with you. I believe the Big Bang happened, but the way when you apply singularity to Big Bangs, at singularity, your math as we know it has a value of zero, time has a value of zero, and all the four nuclear forces have values of absolute zero, but that's just as we know it. I think there's consciousness, and consciousness is information, and the information may not weigh anything, it's just pure information. But as soon as you go from singularity to a duality, if you see that this infinitum of energy in the singularity, and all of a sudden, as soon as you have duality, you have friction. You have positive and negative, which are attracted to each other. They slam into each other. They produce enormous temperature. And then all of a sudden, you have this enormous explosion. And then the infinitum of energy potential in the singularity flows into it, and you get a universe. Element 115 has been duplicated, but most of these super high energy, mass energy particles have very short half-lives, meaning they exist for nanoseconds. Just real.
Yeah, in this dimension.
You're right, and that's a really good observation you just made. In this dimension, they have a very short half-life, so we can only see them. But they're what Bob Lazar proposed when he discovered element 115 in the UFO at Roswell and at Area 51 was that they had stabilized element 115. And what's amazing is his formula for element 115 is marginally, almost precisely exactly the same as when they actually discovered it. So it's kind of amazing. How could Bob Lazar have made this stuff up if the formula he gave was correct? I mean, there's marginal error in the difference between what we're seeing, and his version of element 115 was apparently stable, so he may actually have a superior formula than the formula we have where it was discovered. In many research labs, they've discovered 115 now.
Well,
so,
what I'm saying is that when an experiment is done, such as that one that we're discussing,
mm-hmm.
And I may be wrong, but I think it was in France.
Mm-hmm.
But when that's done, and for these nanoseconds, this element exists, but it exists in the midst of an explosion. A very tiny explosion, but a fierce one at its level.
Well, it's fierce because of the amount of element 115 that were.
Mm-hmm.
I believe we actually discovered it at Berkeley.
Was it at Berkeley? Okay. Wherever they found it, wherever they discovered it, it existed in the midst of its explosion. Mm-hmm. Only for just a few nanoseconds, as you put it.
Yeah, it was discovered at Lawrence Berkeley Lab, but they've now done it in France, Switzerland. They're doing it everywhere now.
Mm-hmm. And each time they do it, mm-hmm. We are told, as one of the laws of physics, that matter doesn't go away, and yet there's nothing left over
mm-hmm.
after that explosion. After that very tiny burst, there's a high-energy, tiny burst where element 115 in the midst of that exists for a nanosecond.
Mm-hmm.
Where does it go? Where does that energy go? If it doesn't disappear, in other words, if it doesn't vanish, it has to exist somewhere. And I'm suggesting there is the possibility that what we're doing is creating what is a tiny bang on this side that becomes a big bang just on the outside
saying.
Of our universe. We have to take a break. I'd like to get your comment on that when we come back. We'll be back right after this, folks.
Get it all. Become a member at kevinsmithshow.com.
Kevin Smith Show at 1-800-289-1092.
We are back. My guest is David Serretta. David, when we went away, I posed a question about that. I can't even say it's my theory. It's just an idea. But,
well, it's an interesting idea to think that if you introduce an element that doesn't naturally occur in Earth, and it, which has an enormous amount of energy, and if you add energy to the current, you know, formula of the how much energy is in the quanta of the universe, then you're definitely creating some sort of an imbalance. But the theory today, the law of conservation of energy, says that everything is just transforming. Mass converts to electromagnetism, and which is a different form of energy, and it converts back into mass. And energy is just exchanging. It's there. You never have more energy or less energy in the universe. You just have this exchange going on. I actually believe that the Big Bang was created out of the singularity, the non-dual field discovered by Dirac. And we do have that singularity can feed and create multiple universes and multiple types of universes. But what you said, you know, is a very challenging question. I mean, if you create an effect by creating an unknown naturally occurring element, and it releases its energy in this dimension, does it create an opposite effect in another dimension to balance that out? And that is a whopper of a question, actually. It's a great question.
Do you know Michio Kaku?
Oh yeah.
Ask him that question for me.
Yeah, that is an amazing question. It's like the butterfly effect. You know, if you disturb, you know, the wave particle field in one part of the universe, it's going to have ripples all throughout the rest of it. And element 115 is not naturally occurring. Physicists had to create it in the lab. And when they did they create something new that is going to have a ripple effect in the cosmos? Well, mm-hmm. It's a very, very challenging question.
And then that opens the possibility, if we find that, in fact, that is happening and that we're creating big bangs on the other side of the wall of our universe, if you will,
mm-hmm.
if that's what's happening, then there's the possibility that that's exactly what happened to us. We got blown out of someone's lab.
You never know. I mean, it could have been, I believe, in the biblical model, when you take in the knowledge of good and evil, you go from the singularity, which is the antithesis, to God saying, never partake of this knowledge of good and evil or you will die. It's a conflict, a polarity matrix. According to Dirac, no dual particles can exist in his sea of pure negativity, which is actually a non-dual negativity. It's not the same as normal negative energy in his formula. And he said that if a polarity tries to enter it, it just spits it out. I think as soon as the first fallen angels took in the knowledge of good and evil, consciousness went into a polarity field, and the Big Bang happened with this super big consciousness that went into a polarity field matrix, and we become the subsequent children of Adam and Eve on that level, and it actually matches perfectly with Dirac's model. That's what's amazing about it. I wrote about it in my book, Singularity, comparing the two models, and then attaining singularity once again. Nirvana in Buddhism is non-duality. It's the non-dual total realization of consciousness, and the God of the Old Testament is basically telling us the same thing, that if you come back to the single place, that's the unifying field. That's the field where what Dirac discovered is if you could become one with the field of singularity, which he labeled as pure negative, which I think he mistakenly labeled it negative, because a negative always attracts a positive, and his negative field doesn't attract a positive, so he's fudging a little bit. But nevertheless, he found that if you entered it and you were one with it, it wouldn't spit you out, and you would have omniscience.
you would be everywhere in the universe at the same time, and you could travel instantaneously and send information instantaneously. And I believe it's Dirac's field that explains spooky action at a distance. And if you think of that field as God, you know, the underlying unifying field of everything, and by partaking of the knowledge of good and evil, conflict cannot exist in a state of peace. It's illogical. It's an oxymoron. You can't have a conflict, which is what good and evil is, existing in a field of oneness or peace. It falls on its own accord. It becomes a bubble. It becomes a spherical shape, a polarity matrix field, and that's what ultimately the human aura is, trapped in this polarity matrix. Now, when we become non-dual, Jesus says, if thine eye be single, your whole body shall be filled with light. If you end the inner conflict over the egoic struggle over who is right and who is wrong, which is all an illusion, you become peaceful, you become nonviolent, you radiate all of the qualities of a nonviolent person, and you naturally, you know, enter the singular field. And it's interesting because light is the only particle in physics, particle wave in physics, that is non-dual. Light spins positive, and it has no antiparticle inside of it. However, the light we experience from our sun is still trapped in the polarity matrix. But,
and you know, we're getting close to the end of the show, and I want to throw this out. I think very often the modern mind has difficulty dealing with singularity mm-hmm. as a state. And here's the deal. The distance between 1 and 2, if you're looking at a number line, is the absolute 1. Mm-hmm. That's the distance. However, the distance between 1 and 2 and the distance between 2 and 2 million, when compared as states, the distance between 1 and 2 is infinitely more vast than the distance between 2 and 2 million.
Oh, it is, and when you deal with fractions, you never get there. It's an eternity. You keep mm-hmm. fractioning the number, and you'll never arrive at 2 or
well,
even
you're
one.
You're moving from singularity to plurality.
Yeah.
You're changing states when you go from 1 to 2.
What we're finding is in all biological systems, including animals and humans, we all have a singularity point, which is where the only place we can explain Einstein's spooky action at a distance, how living beings can communicate with each other instantaneously, circumventing the speed of light limit. So if two people were talking on cell phones, and two people were in love with each other or entangled together, and they were communicating through the singularity, they'd be communicating faster, in fact, instantly over any distance. And when you realize that it's okay to be in a dual polarity matrix, as long as we don't egoically identify and we say our interpretation of this religion is correct and yours is wrong and go to war over it, if we go to war, we're going to waste all of our resources and our energy in this argument, this conflict. And if you see that the three great religions of the world, Christianity, Islam, and Judaism, all have the same God, yet we're at war with each other, you can see that we don't understand this. Now, if we understood the singularity between them, we wouldn't be wasting our resources and going to war with each other. We would see the unified field and we'd experience it, yet we can exist in duality. We can say, you know what, Muslim culture is different than American culture. Those who like it, fine, experience it. Those who don't, you don't have to agree. I mean, singularity doesn't mean we...
Different doesn't mean wrong.
Right, different doesn't mean wrong, and it doesn't mean you have to like, I don't have to like pizza, and I can say I like Greek food, but I don't like Italian, but that doesn't mean I can't see that we're one, that we're... Uh-huh. We're in the unified
field. Are right up against the end of our show, and I would like for you to tell folks again your web address.
The web address for The Voice and my meditation CDs is voice, V-O-I-C-E, entertainment.net. It's not .com, it's .net. That's voiceentertainment.net. And that is where you can get the film, The Voice, right now. It's 3 hours long, 2 episodes, and it's just packed with the information we've been talking about tonight.
David, I want to thank you for being with us. It's been very, very interesting and mind-expanding, and I hope you'll come back and be with us again.
You know, I've really enjoyed the depth of our conversation and your questions and your mind. You've really expanded my mind tonight as well in some new areas. So thank you very much.
Outstanding. Stay on the line with me for just a moment. Ladies and gentlemen, it has come to the time when I have to say my friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You can call me whatever you'd like. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until Monday, so long, everybody.